Welcome to an all-new off-season episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, I am Tyler. I'll be joined by my co-host Matt on the second half of the show. We're going to break down 7 important incoming transfers who we've done some deep dives into around the A-10. Just take a look at how they may fit with their new teams. But in the first half, we have another huge coaching move that we have yet to really get into here. George Mason hiring Maryland assistant and their former player, Tony Skin, to take over in place of Kim English. And I couldn't think of a better guy to bring in to talk about the Patriots' new regime than Petey Buckets. Petey, thank you for joining me.
Hey, Tyler. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so you were one of the guys of the Mason fans who were pretty adamant early on that this should be the guy. And yep. it was a Twitter groundswell that really has not been normal in these coaching searches. It actually more so reminds me of anything Fordham's players all pushing for Keith Ergo last year. I don't think we've ever seen a fan base with this level of consensus, though. So to kick things off, why was everyone just so instantly locked in on this being the dude?
Well, you know, I think if we're going to suffer, we'd rather suffer with one of our own at the helm. I think it probably starts there. But Tony's a very accomplished person in the basketball world in a number of different ways. So this goes beyond just the, you know, he's a homegrown guy. He's a Mason guy. That's why the job should be his. He had a very impressive international playing career. I don't know if the people who are listening to this, if they've seen the highlights of, you know, him breaking James Harden's ankles when he was playing for the Nigerian national team. He played overseas for about 8 years before he got into coaching, and he's risen up the ranks in coaching pretty quickly. Started at Louisiana Tech with Eric Conkle, was under Kevin Willard at Seton Hall, went to Ohio State with Chris Holtman for a year, and then went back to work with Kevin Willard at Maryland for the year that where he's coming from now. And he was being paid, I think, $475,000 a year to be a top assistant at Maryland. So he is, you know, I think he probably wouldn't have been up for any other coaching jobs this cycle. I do think the connection to Mason for him just makes him a much more natural candidate here and a much more natural fit. But, you know, make no mistake, he's very accomplished in his own right. And as an assistant coach, you don't get paid what he was getting paid at Maryland unless you're very, very good at what you're doing. So I think that's where, you know, that's where we're going to start. And the other thing I think that I want to mention in it, which is probably why Mason fans were so happy and so eager to see Skin in here, is that Mason's entire history of basketball is basically Mason sucked before Jim Larrañaga got here. We had 12 years of success and a few tournament appearances in the Final Four when Larrañaga was here. And then we basically haven't sniffed any relevant postseason since then. So the entirety of Mason's basketball history is boiled down to this sort of successful period between 1999 and 2011 when Larrañaga was here. And obviously Tony Skin's career in the Final Four run right smack in the middle of that. So I think that's why this has such a powerful sort of resonance for Mason fans.
Yeah, and there's got to be a little piece of it too that you just got spurned by a young up-and-coming coach leaving after just 2 years. And I think we got to at least believe that, let's say Tony Skin turns out to be a great coach, multiple tournament appearances, maybe a second weekend. I think everyone would believe he stays a while.
We're going to have this conversation already.
Well, look, yes, I think everyone in the mid-major level has this conversation at some point early on with a coach. Totally. Because when you want to dream about, oh, Tony Skin can be a great coach, you know that there's a time limit on most of these guys. And totally. Look, he's only 40 years old. So if he's great, there's probably a time limit on his time at Mason, even though he's an alum. But that limit's going to be a lot longer than Kim English's too.
Yeah, I think there are whispers that Kim's been, pushing pretty hard basically since he got here, or since he got here, he was, looking for his escape route. I don't think it's reasonable to think that Tony's going to stay here forever if he gets us to, two tournament appearances, three tournament appearances, like whatever, I guess Providence came calling with zero tournament appearances for Kim. Nobody says no to the Brinks truck. So Mason's only going to be able to pay Tony so much depending on how well he does here. Everybody's got a price. I'm sure a lot remains to be seen, but if Tony gets there and if he does accomplish the things that we're hoping to accomplish and some team comes in and offers him a boatload, like absolutely, he's a human being. He's going to take that. But I also think that he's probably going to be much less, proactive than somebody like Kim, probably was being behind the scenes. That's my take on it.
So there was a method to the madness of this question. So I do want to go into the expectations. And one of the things that really became clear to me in these last few weeks, because quite frankly, I wasn't paying that much attention to Mason when Larrañaga left for Miami. They were still in the CAA. I was still in high school. George Mason just wasn't really on my radar. And when they fired Paulson, it was because they fired a coach who wasn't doing that well. This summer, well, I guess this spring still, it became a discussion about resources and what George Mason's basketball program is capable of being able to pay a coach, what they're capable of in terms of bringing in talent. So, as a fan base, what are the expectations for the program at this point? What makes this a successful tenure for Tony Skin?
I think it's similar to any program at the A10 level should be aspiring to the NCAA tournament, probably a minimum of like once out of every 5 or so years. You really want typically one every recruiting class usually should get to a tournament, I think is sort of like the standard. And the resources discussion is what is where we sort of start to think about how reasonable that is program by program. So, I think, I personally don't actually care at all about the NIT. But one of the things that I think is interesting is that Mason has not had a top 100 KenPom team since Larrañaga left. It was actually the year after Larrañaga. Paul Hewitt finished 110 with all of Larrañaga's players. And then Kim English's first year, he finished 113. Those are our two best seasons by KenPom since the Larrañaga era. So, just sort of like immediately off the bat in the first season or two, I would love to see a top 100 KenPom season to show that we're sort of like going in the right direction. That might be an NIT team. And that might, that would, of course, be an indicator of progress because we haven't even sniffed the NIT really since Larrañaga left. So, I think long term, of course, we want to go back to the tournament, but I also think we need to be fairly realistic about where Mason has been in the grand scheme of things in recent history. And so I think that's where I would start.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you go that way because the first thing that's running through my head as soon as you said that is, well, I look at a program like Duquesne or Fordham, who obviously has struggled for longer than Mason has. But if Duquesne were to make the NIT this year, I would consider that a significant success, not necessarily because it's just a barrel of fun to watch your team play in the NIT, but just because it goes to show that they're just better. Like the NIT still, getting an NIT invitation still means that you achieved a certain level. This isn't the CBI. But if you're looking at the KenPom numbers, and I guess that's kind of a different way to go about the same sense of accomplishment.
It's very similar, and I think programs like this should just be looking for progress overall first, because I think that sort of progress consistently being in the top 100, that's a an indicator that your program is sort of like knocking on the door. You might not be there, or you might not ever get there, but you're close, you're in range. And I think if you're going to build something that's sustainable, if you're going to build it correctly, if it's going to last from coaching regime to coaching regime, then you sort of need to be in the ballpark first, rather than just having, terrible years and then good years.
Yeah, so before we move on to the specifics of the Tony Skin era, I want to kind of close the book on the Kim English era. So
Consider it closed.
you mark top 100 KenPom as a big sign of progress, as you just said. Let's say Kim English had come back this year, and we can never assume anything, but let's say the roster looks pretty similar to last year, that all those guys who followed him to Providence end up staying with him at Mason, that Dinkins and Polite and Malik Henry, who've all stayed, end up staying as well. Was next year's team going to be able to break through that level? Or were they just going to kind of look like a repeat of what we saw this year? Like 120-ish, sniffing around the double bye, but they didn't quite get there. And then once they ran into a more talented team in the A-10 tournament, they just kind of got slapped around on their way out the door.
Yeah, it's a fascinating question, and this is something that we were going back and forth on, sort of in the George Mason group chats, that I'm part of a couple of them. It was not very easy to me to see a path to this team being better this year, and this is before all the English to Providence stuff broke. We were having debates about, like, all right, so we've got Oduro's tickets coming back. Fernandez maybe makes a sophomore leap, and we've got Ronnie Polite, but how does that is that team really going to be better? Where we finished like 145 in KenPom this year, and so how does that team actually does that team actually knock on the door for anything meaningful? Maybe the A10 continues to regress and that team improves marginally and gets a double bye. But how much does that really mean if we're still not sniffing the NIT, still not sniffing the NCAA tournament? So I think it would have required Kim to land probably a stud scoring guard out of the portal, because really, dynamic scoring, dynamic playmaking from the guards is, sort of the lack thereof is just what plagued Kim during his 2 years here. And I didn't quite see how it was all going to come together in a way that was, significantly better than what we saw this year. So it's a very interesting question, though.
Yeah, and then you kind of would have gone into a little bit of a reload after that. Aduro, Gaines, and I feel like Ronald Polite going into his last year of eligibility, or does he have one more?
He has a COVID year, so he has 2 years.
Okay. So he could have conceivably been back, but then you basically would have been looking at the roster you're looking at now, which there's certainly an argument to say that maybe Kim English leaving doesn't really hurt Mason that much in the long term. I think it's certainly going to hurt them this year because the roster was just left so barren for this season. But given where the timeline was headed, it probably wasn't going to result in a tournament appearance the next 2 years. And then by that point, English might have been gone somewhere else anyway. So any closing thoughts there on Kim's tenure in Mason, anything that is really not being represented in like how the Mason fans felt about this transition?
Just closing thoughts. I mean, I think I got the sense that Kim wasn't totally comfortable recruiting at this level. And so by that, I mean, his previous stops at Tennessee, Colorado, he was recruiting blue chippers. He's recruiting 4 stars and 5 stars. He comes to the A10, he did a great job with Justin Fernandez, but he can't quite get that level of talent. He has to look a click or two down. And there are, I think, a number of different things that indicated that wasn't necessarily his comfort zone, wasn't necessarily his strong suit. One of the examples, I think, is Jordan Marsh, a very tiny point guard. That was committed to Mason, who recently decommitted after the coaching change. He was a guy who had like no other Division I offers, and he was it was just a really sort of odd scholarship offer and seems like an odd fit. You know, he's a very dynamic scorer, but he's also playing with other D1 guys, playing on an AAU circuit where he's in front of Division I coaches all the time, and just nobody wanted him. And Kim offered him on the spot and kind of pressured him to commit. And so I think there are little things like that that indicate that maybe this, you know, Kim might have had some unfamiliarity with, you know, recruiting below and like outside of the top 150 range that made this job not exactly his wheelhouse. So it's, you know, and that's not like a fully fleshed out thought, but definitely something that was sort of like nagging on me through this offseason.
And hey, Jordan Marsh, video on YouTube from January, one of the best kept secrets in the country.
His
So,
coach absolutely loves him. I hope he has a great career somewhere. But I mean, at the end of the day, he's like, you know, he has not had a lack of exposure to Division I coaches. Like, they're watching him play all the time.
and ironically, he committed right before English left. So, a little bit of a weird timing there, but we've talked enough about him by now. Let's take a look ahead into the future. So, systematically, we obviously don't have a great track record of what Tony Skin's going to want to do, given that he's never been a head coach at any level, actually, an assistant in the AAU circuit for a little bit, and then in college, because he has spent basically half of his post-college playing career continuing to play. But do we have any kind of indication what kind of systems we're going to see from him on each side of the ball?
So defensively, he's talked a lot about pressure. He's talked about turning defense into offense. He's referenced the 2-2-1 press. So I think you're going to see probably more defensive pressure, more ball pressure than you've ever seen from Mason teams. It was not something that Dave Paulson did. It was not something that Kim English did. I kind of blacked out the Hewitt tenure, so I don't really remember if Hewitt did it or not. But historically, Mason hasn't played a sort of aggressive attacking defense. That is the one notable thing that Tony has been talking about with a good amount of consistency since he's taken the post. So that part is really interesting. Offensively, I've asked everybody that I can, and nobody really knows. So one of the assistants did say the system that they run is going to largely be dependent on what kind of players they're able to land, because really, you know, we have Ronald Polite and Malik Henry are the two starters right now. And then we've got, you know, Devin Dinkins, Peter Oduro, some, you know, guys that are, you know, likely not really the types that you drop an offense around. So the roster is still so barren that I think they probably need to see who is actually going to be on the roster before they start making decisions like that.
Yeah, and I can't believe that after over a decade of havoc and a few years of mayhem, that George Mason could end up being the only team in the greater DMV area in the A10 who is pressuring people defensively.
It's fascinating. Fascinating. I hope it works out for us better than it does for VCU.
And I think every Mason fan would share that sentiment with you, but we'll turn it to the roster here. You mentioned it's pretty barren. You do get back Polite, who really blew me away at the end of that season. I'm still kind of annoyed, I guess is the right word, that he didn't make all conference, because he played his way into a top 18 spot at the end of the season, and there were one or two guys that got in over him on reputation. He was unbelievable the last month, and that's a guy that I will be putting in my top 10 when we inevitably do our top player rankings come September. Malik Henry, I don't understand why he played as little as he did down the stretch. Because when he started playing a big role in January, it just felt like the Patriots were better. But those are two nice pieces to have there. They're maybe not quite centerpieces. I think Polite's close to one, but like Malik Henry's just a good dude to have who's going to fit with a lot of different potential players. You mentioned Peter Oduro. He's a walk-on. He's Josh's brother. Is this a guy who's has the ability to make an impact this season?
Not a walk-on, actually. He's on scholarship.
Was he a walk-on last year?
Nope.
Okay, well,
No.
someone, when he first committed, it was going around that he was going to walk on to the team, so.
Yeah, it's a bit of an interesting. There's some rumors about the arrangement, but it's he's not the sort of guy that like you're going to count on him and like pencil him into a starting spot. So we'll sort of leave that there. But I mean, yeah, Ronnie has a lot of potential. Ronnie, he stepped it up from all parts of the court this year. I love point guards who can get into the paint, who can get their own buckets, and that showed up huge in crunch time in a few of the close games that Mason played this season. Ronnie really has to eliminate the mistakes. He turns the ball over too much, and the really frustrating thing about the turnovers is that half of his turnovers are just like his brain turns off. He'll just like dribble straight out of bounds, he'll like step on the baseline or something. And so I think it's a fixable problem. In the sense that you can fix that, but he's got to cut out the mental mistakes. He's got to take better care of the ball, and then yeah, he absolutely could be a top 10 player. Malik, I think, has shown great improvement. He's still a little bit situational in the sense that he looks great in a fast-paced game because he runs the floor exceptionally well for his size, and he can create all sort of problems that way. Not quite as polished back to the basket. He looked a lot better, but he's certainly no Josh Oduro in terms of the ways that he's able to score down low. But I personally love both of those guys. They're actually going to be playing for their third coach at Mason under Tony Skin, because they both came in under Paulson. So I love both of those guys. Really, really hope we see big things from them.
Yeah, so for Malik Henry, what do you kind of see as the ideal role for him this season? Is he a starting four, a starting five, or more of kind of a hybrid cover both spots third big?
People talk about him as a four. I think offensively, he's definitely more of a five. He doesn't have a shot. He can't stretch the floor. I think if you're talking about him as a four, it's because he has great feet. His foot speed is excellent, and he can cover out to the perimeter. He can cover smaller players. He did that very credibly this year. And so I think he has some sort of defensive versatility in that sense. But just because of the, he needs the ball within 8 feet of the basket if he's going to do anything. So in that sense, he's a five. And I think if you want to play fast, he's a great guy to put at sort of the bottom of that 2-2-1 press as sort of a backup rim protector, just because of his range and his athleticism. So I hope we get to see him run a little bit more.
Yeah, and we'll see if they can find the right guys to put next to him. His role may end up depending on what the new regime is able to bring in over these next few weeks. And it's tough. I want to ask you, like, what type of player are you looking for? But there's so many holes in this roster. You're kind of looking for everything. So we'll actually go a little bit more specific than I tend to like to with recruiting at this point. But any names that are floating around of recruits either in the portal or in high school that you look at this guy, and on your first impression, this is just someone that you really want to see as a Patriot
Yeah.
at this point.
Yeah, so the thing is, Kim English had this reputation as an exceptional recruiter, and that was big part of the reason he was tabbed as, the guy, or he's been anointed as a rising star. Tony can recruit too. So I don't know if it's fair to put those same expectations on him, but I'm very, very encouraged by some of the names we're hearing. Virginia Tech transfer Darius Maddox would be a big one. Keyshawn Hall was a great, great freshman for UNLV last year. You look at his efficiency numbers, they're fantastic. He only got about 10 minutes a game. He's the kind that I'm very comfortable projecting that guy to be very, very good. Mason has offered him. Unfortunately, VCU has offered him as well. So there's a little bit of a head-to-head there. His services are going to be in demand. I love those two. And also one of our assistants, Mike Ekinem, came from Sam Houston State. 6'9" high school big man named Torrey Alston. Really like his game. He has since decommitted from Sam Houston State, and his options are open. So I think there are a number of different names that are flying around there that Mason has been linked to. I think those are three that I would be very, very excited to see.
All right, so we will all keep an eye out for those guys. But You're a Mason specialist, obviously, a big fan of the program, but you tend to keep your eye on the whole A-10 league-wide throughout the season. Is there
Right.
any other team or player that you've just been thinking about here in these last few weeks? You really want to see what happens, whether it's either an incoming player that you think could be particularly good, or a team that you're really intrigued to see what they're able to do recruiting-wise throughout April.
Oh boy. It's I might hate myself for this. The first place my mind goes is St. Joe's, actually. Because St. Joe's, Eric Reynolds, I believe, is an NBA talent. He is so good. He's probably the first one that I think about. And I think it really looked like they found something last year, putting Lynn Greer next to him. They've got a good recruiting class coming in. Those guys have had a year. Now they've got a full offseason together. The rest of the A-10 is going to get worse. So I don't really know how much better St. Joe's has to get in order to be very legitimately in the double bye conversation. But just the way that things are shifting around the A-10 makes them, and I do think like all signs, lots to be determined, all signs point to the A-10 probably being even worse next year, as hard as that is to believe. And it puts St. Joe's returning that all league caliber backcourt along with a good recruiting class. It makes them a really, really interesting team.
So it's funny you say that the league's going to be worse, and I'll go back to St. Joe's in a second here. But full disclosure, we recorded this podcast in backwards order. So the second half that everyone's about to hear coming up in a few minutes, we recorded, has already been done while I'm talking to you. But I mentioned that I think very, very early in that segment that everyone thinks the league's going to be worse next year. Are we sure? Because I'm just kind of not sure that it can get any worse.
Oh, it can always get worse, my friend.
Like, could be worse. I guess the A-10 could still drop below the MAC, but it's about the only other mid-tier conference that's not that far
I
away.
mean, Fordham was like what 130 something on KenPom, and they finished in third in the A-10 this year. I think you might see multiple teams outside of the top 100 getting double buys next year. I just don't know. I just don't know where the top end firepower is going to come from. And again, lots of things still need to take shape. But the question for me right now is, who are you expecting to carry the banner? St. Louis has been gutted. Dayton's been gutted. VCU has been gutted. You're asking for sort of a non-traditional, you're asking for multiple non-traditional conference powers to step up if, those schools can't figure it out through the portal, which, figuring it out through the portal, it sounds great. It's very, very hard to do, as we've seen. So I think it's the A-10 is in a bit of a precarious position.
Petey, I'm disappointed to hear you say this. The answer is obviously Loyola, who's top 80 in preseason T rank right now.
Oh, really? Good
And
for
that's
them.
a real fact somehow.
Are you I will confidently state that Loyola is probably going to be better this year than last. How much that actually means, who
They
knows?
truly can't be worse than last year. So,
Literally, yeah.
St. Joe's, they have the most fully formed roster in this league right now. I think they only have one scholarship left. They actually might be done, but they're going to be a top
Yeah.
three offense in this conference. I say that with full confidence, not knowing what any of these other teams look like right now.
I
And
know, isn't
we'll see what happens on the defensive side of the ball, but they're going to be competitive this season.
isn't it kind of fascinating? Billy Lang has been like the Fredo Corleone of this league since he joined, and now he's got to be looking around the room feeling like he's the only one who has his shit together.
I think there's two schools that are not that far away from St. Joe's, one to the east, one to the west, that probably feel pretty good about where they're at right now. But those are two other non-traditional powers in Duquesne and Fordham. So,
Oh, Duquesne. Oh, I thought you were going to say GW. They're kind of
no.
interesting too.
Well, they just don't. They still only have a half a roster at this point.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with them, but. I think it's Peter Griffin that said, up is down, white is east. That's basically how we're feeling right now, trying to do preseason predictions for next year. But Petey, we'll close it out here. I just want to know. New coach at Mason. Everyone seems reinvigorated in the fan base. What percentage are you committed to full out supporting this team and rooting for them over these next few years?
100%. Not one penny
wow,
over 100%.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah.
I do. Maybe Mason will get it just for you. I just want somebody to be 95% committed in their commitment announcement.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I assume you're referencing Bucket's Law.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You, for anyone who
no,
hasn't noticed, you've been pointing out all the people on Twitter who are more than 100% committed. The newest one was that St. Louis big man who just decommitted, like, honestly, 10 minutes before we started recording. He was
Brock,
110% committed
yep.
to St. Louis when he made his announcement. So
can't go over 100%. It never works out.
Yeah, you got to keep it within reason.
Yeah.
But Petey, thank you for joining me. Where can everyone find your great Twitter takes if they somehow aren't following you already?
At this point, I'm just on Twitter at PD Buckets. If you're interested in Mason basketball, follow at GMU Giant Killer or at By George GMU. That's where we are doing all of our fan blogging, recruiting updates, coverage. You know, we've been stepping it up from the Mason coverage side.
Yeah, it is a great site, and two major contributors to that site on the pod within the last, I think, 7 episodes. So,
yep.
Brian from Giant Killer, I know you weren't happy that you guys weren't represented in the media poll for the all conference vote, but we have represented you guys well in this podcast since. So
you certainly have.
Everyone go check out Giant Killer. Go follow Petey. He'll give you plenty of jokes to go with his analysis too. One of the best accounts on A10 Twitter. Go check it out. Petey, thank you for joining me.
I appreciate it, Tyler.
All right, another thanks to Petey for joining us, talking George Mason. New era with the Patriots, and it's looking like there's going to be a new era on the rosters of a lot of these A10 teams this year. A massive exodus of transfers and graduates this year, and for everyone looking around saying like, oh, next year's definitely going to be worse just because of all the talent that's lost, I just want to point out and say before we go into this next segment, one, it's not necessarily true because, number one, really can't get much worse than last year. We need to remember that. Like, it's pretty hard for a mid-major to have a worse year than last year.
So you don't think we're going to be worse than the Ivy in the WAC?
We might still be worse than the Ivy. Never doubt the Ivy. But I'm not expecting, like, trying to think of who else is around that level. Like, I don't think the Ohio Valley is going to get themselves to a point that they're going to jump the A10 anytime soon. But number two, look at Duquesne last year. Sometimes when you hit rock bottom, you got to tear it down to the studs and rebuild. And that's kind of what's happening across this league this year. Really, the only three rosters that are going to look super similar are three teams that exceeded expectations last year: Duquesne, Fordham, and St. Joe's, all trying to build off of some good momentum. All the teams who disappointed and VCU are kind of building up again, but that means we got a ton of incoming transfers, and there's going to be plenty more coming over the next month. So we're going to take a little bit of a dive into these guys. I think we looked at 7 players total between the two of us. And I complained about this on Twitter. It's tough to find games. Like, ESPN Plus kind of wiped their archives from the season already. So we do what we can. I watched some film on these guys for whatever I could find. But fortunately, we're so lucky that after doing this for years, we've gotten to meet a lot of people who have great knowledge of different corners of college basketball. And so we've been able to kind of lean on them, get some scouting reports on some of these guys. And I'm happy to share that with all of you guys who are listening right now. So Matt, you want to kick us off with one of the guys you took a look into?
Sure, I can do that. And yeah, just going off what you said so far, there's a lot of A10 teams that don't have much in the way of bodies on the roster right now. So this is going to fill up. The teams are going to get more and more transfers over the next couple weeks, but we were able to find enough good ones to talk about, I think. And some guys who we've seen in the portal era, even before that, transfers can have a big impact in the A10. So in a year where a lot of these teams are going to look so much different, I think it's important to start looking at some of these guys that could play a major role. But one in particular, I think a good place to start, Davidson is going to change a bunch. They lose Foster Lawyer, who's been a mainstay at point guard the last 2 years, and then Sam Mananga deciding to go play professionally after 3 seasons as a Wildcat. So it's going to be a different looking team. And I think they filled a great hole at the guard spot. Bringing in Angelo Brizzi from Villanova kind of seems like there could be a few similarities to Lawyer in that this is a guy who spent 2 years, one as a red shirt at a really good national championship caliber program. And his red shirt year, Villanova went to the Final Four. So he's been around success. And it seems like he's a natural fit to slide right into that point guard role. He's a really good shooter, which is what Davidson's going to need. And I'm just curious to see, the Wildcats also lost Des Watson. So normally they've had a pretty well-balanced attack offensively, and no one player, even though Davidson's had multiple players of the year since joining the A10, they've never really been carried by one guy, but it almost seems like Brizzy has that capability just because the Wildcats are losing three of their leading scorers from last year.
Yeah, and he slides into about as nice of a spot as you can with this barren roster. I don't want to say barren. There's a few interesting
I
guys
mean, we
here.
still like Reed
Come
Bailey. We
on,
like
Reid Bailey.
Huffman. Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to slander Grant Huffman here because that's where I'm going with this. He's kind of the great guy, a perfect fit for a freshman point guard. Someone who's going to give you a lot of secondary playmaking. I don't think anyone really noticed. Huffman had more assists per game in conference play than Foster Lawyer did. He turned into an excellent offensive option as the season went on. Still not a great shooter, but he'll get by. And he's great at just about everything else. He's going to take the tougher assignment in the backcourt every game. And so it's kind of a perfect spot to throw a guy like Brizzy into the fire. Biggest issue, this team is still missing the signature Davidson amount of shooters around him, and that's going to make his life tougher. Although, that's a team that looking ahead, with everyone being so obsessed with the transfer portal, I feel like Davidson is going to land a freshman who is basically too good for them at some point here in the next few weeks. You think like RJ Louise last year at UMass should have been off the board to a Power Five team so much earlier than he was, but they were all focused on the portal. I think Davidson could get a guy of that caliber because the no grad school thing gives them a lot of problems bringing in transfers, and I think they're going to look that way.
Yeah, they very well could, but a couple things that stood out to me with Brizzy, just I thought he's a good place to start because we pretty much know he's going to be important to this team. Within like 10 or 15 seconds of watching his highlights, he threw down a dunk, so that's one hint right off the bat. He's not quite going to be Foster Lawyer. He's a lot bigger, 6'3", 6'4". Seems like he's really like aggressive defensively, which is something Davidson could use, just a little more tenacity on the perimeter. But overall, too, you just look at his path at Villanova. I'm not concerned at all that he left the team mid-season, didn't get much playing time, because you think about it, he redshirted a year under Jay Wright, who then retired, actually played double-digit minutes the first 6 or 7 games of the year before kind of falling out of the rotation, losing his spot to another freshman, Mark Armstrong, for the Wildcats. So when you realize that, he kind of got phased out. He had a new coach that didn't recruit him. it makes sense that he would want a change of scenery and try to start someplace else. So I'm excited for him to join Davidson. They've already had a ton of success with point guards since being in the A-10, and it seems like he could be joining the line of excellence there.
All right. I will carry it on to another one of the A-10's traditional powers, the Dayton Flyers, who add Eno Cheeks from Robert Morris, a 6'3 guard who, at first look, looks even more slender than the 190-pound frame that he is advertising. And if Dayton fans want to get a good look at this guy, for him, I was able to find the game that I wanted to watch to scout him. So if you go on a little website called youtube.com and search for Robert Morris against Dayton in basketball, that entire game is on there. Cheeks goes off for 17 points against what was, at that time, a Dayton defense that was playing the best it did all year. That's when they looked elite at all five positions. And Cheeks held his own. Kind of struggled with the physicality when Malachi Smith was getting up in his face. And when you see his body type, like, you're not going to be surprised at that. I really hope he can put on some muscle over the summer. It'll help him a lot. But he is going to immediately give Dayton something that they so desperately needed this year. A quick twitch three-level score. In that game, he was showing off from all parts of the court. Put home a beautiful step back three. He hit a Trey Young looking shot from the logo. He was getting to the rim in a flash. This dude's got Kyrell Luke level quickness, and that's saying something. He took a floater. It looked nice. It rimmed out. That was all I got to see it in that regard. But Dayton needed that type of guy so badly because last year, Kobe Elvis and Kobe Brea, and neither of them did this a ton the year before, but they did not get to the rim at all. And Malachi Smith, when he was hampered by the injury, wasn't doing it either. Cheeks is going to get the ball inside from the backcourt for Dayton this year. We'll see what else he can bring to the table.
Yeah, I think it's exciting for Dayton. And the biggest thing for me, they needed to address the lack of guard depth, especially with Mike Sharvejumps leaving the program. I think his quickness stands out to me, too, just remembering back from that game in November. And, you know, all three of Dayton's returning guards, Smith, Brea, and Elvis, they were all hurt this year. They all lacked the explosiveness that they had the prior season, and I think Cheeks is going to solve a lot of those issues. So, you know, between him and they also brought in another guard, Javon Bennett from Merrimack, the Flyers should have a little bit of backcourt depth, or at least it appears that way, which it didn't this time last year, really. So seems like a good move, and I just think it's kind of funny. I don't know if you're able to catch it too much from watching the highlights, but Cheeks was harassed the entire game from the Red Scare. They were just chanting his name every time he touched the ball. And he was able to, you know, live up to that and play a big game in front of a nice crowd. So hopefully he can continue that in a Dayton uniform.
And by the way, that's why he came.
Oh, yeah. He said hilarious.
He had so much fun playing in front of that crowd that he wanted to do it with them on his side. And I think that, now we got to be careful. Everyone on Twitter wants to scream about the warning of let's not hype up every transfer too much. So let's look at this from both sides from Cheeks. He's going to be a huge asset offensively for them. Everything I just described, to give the numbers, 15.5 points a game, 3.5 assists. He was a 36% three-point shooter, third team all-conference in the Horizon League. He's going to be a very good secondary scoring option in the backcourt for the Flyers. Now, we'll see if he can hold up on defense, because on that offensive end, he was basically described to me by Tristan Freeman as a great three-point shooter who can score for you from two as need be, while maybe not necessarily being a point guard, but being a very good passer if he plays off the ball. You know what that said to me? that screamed, this is what we all hope that Kobe Elvis can be at his best. And I think Cheeks is going to give them that if Elvis can't. But we know that if you don't play defense, Anthony Grant won't keep you on the court. And that slender frame is going to come into play if he can't pack on some muscle. Like, he's just going to struggle against stronger A-10 point guards. Like, you think about throwing him up against Ronald Polite or Lynn Greer. Those guys are going to beat him up. Now, Tristan did also note he was a great defender against smaller guards. So he's got that going for him. We will see. This is a very interesting pickup for Dayton. And I think one that really fits the proper need. And it's Anthony. This shows me that Anthony Grant understood where their biggest problems were last year.
Right, well, I can move into another one of my picks to talk about. And another team with a lot of new faces, but one of them for Rhode Island is Jaden House coming over from High Point. And this is kind of low hanging fruit, but when I'm looking at his game, looking at his highlights, it kind of just seems like he's going to be bigger Fats Russell. He's 6'3", so a little bit more length on the court, but top 30 usage rate in the country last year. Really, really good at getting to the free throw line, 13th in the country in drawing fouls. So he is going to create offense for the Rams, and that's something that they're going to desperately need. Losing Ishmael Leggett, obviously they lost Breon Freeman during the season. So there's really no proven offensive weapons on the Rams going into next year right now. And I just think he is going to get a lot of opportunity to score. The question is going to be if Rhode Island can space the floor enough to let House do his thing and get to the rim and draw contact, because High Point was a team that shot a lot more threes. As we know, Rhode Island was terrible from deep last year. So I just wonder if that's going to mean teams are going to give House way too much attention on defense, but at the very least, he's going to give the Rams a much needed scoring threat.
Yeah, and they just need anybody who can go win them some games with their offense. That's the one thing that Breon Freeman was able to do for them, and they got a little bit of it from Ish Leggett, although I hesitate to say that because Leggett had a much better all-around game. But yeah, Rhode Island's not going to be that good this year. I think we can probably say that right now. And if House can ease off the scoring pressure on some developing guys like a Brandon Weston, then that's really one of the most important things that the Rams can have.
I think one concern just for Rhode Island with him, they don't look to have many options in the way of true point guards. Maybe it's going to be freshman Cam Estevez. They bring in a couple transfer wings, but overall, losing Sebastian Thomas, who wasn't great last year, they're still going to need someone to handle the ball, and that doesn't seem to be House's game. He's just more of a slasher. I don't think he's going to distribute quite as much. So overall, I don't know. Rhode Island's offense, like, it's hard to see it getting much more ugly than it was last year, but I think they're going to need at least one more piece around him to make it work.
Yeah, and they have a lot of roster spots still open, so clearly more work for Archie to do, even more so than some of these other teams. But
yeah, quick question too, or just comment on House. So when he committed to Rhode Island, I thought this was clever. He tweeted hashtag Ram fam. Do we like that more than Fordham's Ramily or VCU's Ram Nation?
No, that's the worst of the three.
Well, we'll see if it works. That's the first I've seen it, though. At least he's not plagiarizing the Ramily.
Oh, my God. I hate it more now that you said it again.
I wonder if Archie likes it. He needs to start tweeting that.
We'll see if he does. It would be interesting. But I'm going to go over to the Ram Blurs, another kind of messy usage of Ram. They add two transfers. One that we know well, Des Watson. Don't really need to break down his game, but I'll talk about how he fits with that team in a moment here. But they had a big man from Dartmouth, Demi Adelican. Big time scorer for the Mean Green, or the Big Green, Mean Greens, North Texas, but 14 points a game for them. More importantly, an elite rebounder. If he had played in the A-10 last year, he would have been third in the conference in defensive rebounding percentage, fifth in offensive rebounding percentage. And Loyola needs some help there. But this guy, what I was able to see, game against Vermont, where he went up against a bunch of guys who were basically built like stronger level A-10 power forwards, like actually kind of just think his teammate Phil Alston. That's who Vermont was thrown out at center. And every time they got this man the ball on the blocks on an island, he was just killing people down there. He's got a great arsenal of moves. He is unbelievably strong. And he's bringing Loyola back to the type of team that Porter Moser liked to run. Think about their roster right now. This guy who... I'm going to stereotype. I'm going to say that because he was able to get into Dartmouth, it's probably a high intelligence player out there. But him, Welch, Philip Alston, and now Des Watson, with all that he can do as a cutter, it's a lot of guys who are going to be incredibly efficient in the paint, who are very smart basketball players. And that's something that was a signature of these Porter Moser teams, that could pummel you down low, that we're going to be an elite two-point shooting team. And the reason that those teams were able to work is that everyone who was out there was smart. And last year's Loyola team was one of the on-the-court dumbest teams I've ever watched. And these two guys are going to start to change that.
I'm already thinking about, well, I mean, one, I agree with your point. It was infuriating watching the Ramblers turn the ball over. And you could see it from the second or third game of the year. It wasn't going to be a clean basketball team that would value possession. But I just don't know what to make of them, because normally when somebody has a season like Loyola did, you're going to see a lot of guys leave the team. But really, they brought back the core. And I would say between these two guys, have the Ramblers have they won the off season so far, at least as a whole, that they have two quality transfers? I don't know if we can really say that about anyone else in the A-10 right now.
Well, someone just tweeted out that the T rank numbers are already up for next year and they're currently first in the A-10.
Oh my God.
But that's also because they have a veteran roster with a lot of guys on it.
Yeah, I mean, some of these A-10 teams have like four or five players, so it's too early to worry about that. But I mean, I can almost see it, because they did bring back most of the good guys, like Norris. I mean, Schweiger was almost, he might have been all rookie team. He was close, so.
He should have been. I don't think he was, because Sharv Jumps idiotically stole his spot out of reputation.
Yeah, the first reputation all-freshman team pick, but... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to make of Loyola. I'm going to take back what I said, though. UMass is going to win the offseason. They will find a way. They do it every year. We have more on them later.
We'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, they haven't won the offseason yet. They have some more work to do. But I can go ahead and get into my next pick.
I got one more thing on Loyola here.
All right.
Because right now, they do at least clearly look like the best interior offense in the A-10. All those guys I mentioned, and by the way, Jalen Quinn slashing to the rim. I'm all in on that. He is one of the most impressive slashers I've seen from a young player in a while. He's still got to clean up the rest of his game, but they're going to get to the hoop over and over and over again. And the biggest issue that they're going to have, they don't have a shooter right now. It's Norris and a little bit Sheldon Edwards. They need a sniper, kind of like those Ivy League guys that they had 2 years ago. Just a cold-blooded shooter to add to this team. Because right now, if I was playing against them, I would just run a box and one, take out Norris, and just pack the paint on everybody else. But that's where Adelican's going to come in handy. If teams do try to pack the paint, And a big shout out to Coach Sidney Johnson of the Ivy League Hoops Hour podcast. Free plug for them right here. A show so great that it makes me care more about the Ivy League than most of the power conferences now, just because it's such a good show and I enjoy learning about the league now. But he pointed out to me that he is elite at getting to the free throw line. And whether Loyola can add that shooter or not, they're going to face a lot of packed paints and they're going to need that skill from him. And that's where he could end up taking the starting job from Welch, who I think will probably start the year as a starter, but that can end up switching hands.
All right. I didn't know we were going to be doing this tonight, but we're starting the Loyola hype early in the off season.
No, their Gotta fans have it. Already did that. I'm not starting the hype yet. Get me one shooter before I start to consider you finishing top four.
I mean, I feel like you look at the status of some of these other teams. I feel pretty good saying they're not going to finish last again. I don't know if they're going to avoid.
No. They won't be last.
I don't know if they're avoiding the pillow fight yet, but they're not going to be last. I'm pretty sure. But there's a long off season to go. So I'll get into my next guy. Coming over from Oklahoma, CJ Nolan, transferring to St. Louis, spent 2 years in the Big 12 with the Sooners, got some decent playing time, around 12 to 15 minutes a game, both seasons there. And a couple things that stand out to me, only 6 foot two, but he's listed at 229 pounds. And with a steal rate over three as a freshman, doesn't that just remind you a little bit of Fred Thatch right away? Like, based on his build, it seems like he could bring a little bit of much-needed physicality to the Billikens. But I think overall, it's kind of interesting. He had a really efficient freshman season, shot over 60% from two, over 43% from three, so he wasn't getting a ton of opportunity, but making the most of his chances. And last year, just his efficiency fell off a cliff. Three-point shooting was down. He was turning the ball over a lot. And I think this is a good opportunity for him going down to a lower league. He already had a productive freshman season, and we know he can shoot the ball a little bit. But it's not like St. Louis needs him to go out and be a star. They're bringing back Gibson Jimerson, who, I mean, very well at this point in time, he's a possibility to make all-conference first team with how many points he could score for the Billikens. So if Nolan can just be a nice secondary piece and bring some much-needed perimeter defense and strength to the lineup, I like that acquisition as a role player.
Yeah, and by the way, it goes back to kind of the stuff I was just talking about. Who landed Nolan out of high school? Porter Moser.
Yeah.
St. Louis needs some Porter Moser guys, too. But, yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Like, they just need more wing athletes. That's what they were missing last year. Because Jimerson's never going to be the athletic all-around-the-court guy that you would hope. And Perkins was clearly so sapped by the injury throughout the season. Sincere Parker's not exactly a defensive ace, although he showed a little bit on that side. They need a prime athlete to start this roster off, and we'll see where the other pieces go. But, all right, let's move on to the big man. And we both kind of half did research on this guy. Josh Cohen, coming in from St. Francis of Pennsylvania, 21.8 points a game last year, 10th in the nation in scoring. Not in the NEC, in the whole darn country. Co-player of the year in that conference. His fellow co-player of the year just committed to Virginia today. So to give you an idea of the pedigree there, he is the most perfect fit of any transfer we've had so far. And probably will be of the entire offseason, because Frank Martin still wants to play with everything centered around a great low post score. And who knows what else this guy's going to be able to do in the A-10, but he's going to be a great low post score. He's got such an incredible arsenal of moves. And For comparison, the guy they brought in last year, Isaac Conte, came from the same conference. He wasn't even on the on an all-conference team. There's just a different level of talent coming from this guy. And with Levesque coming back, they can now go super big, let Levesque guard the rim, and let Cohen rip guys apart on the offensive end.
So I was actually going to ask about that. I didn't know if we had a decision on Levesque. Is he confirmed back next
I'm
year?
I'm 99% sure he is.
My God,
people
UMass
are talking about like he is. So
UMass is going to be huge next year because they still have Matt Cross, and they just got a commitment from, I think, a 7'4 center the other day. God, that you want to talk about length. But yeah, I'm excited to see what Cohen does. I mean, obviously the question is going to be, how is he going to do jumping up to a much, much higher level of competition? Because even though he put up 22 points a game, the NEC, like, don't let Fairleigh Dickinson fool you. That is a bad, bad conference. But looking at his stats, it is very impressive. I think his efficiency at such a high usage will be critical, because last year, I remember talking about it with Jay Burnham, the Minutemen were one of the worst inside scoring teams in the country. They were just about dead last in 2-point shooting. And you know that Cohen isn't going to do that. Just watching his highlights, I know you're only going to see the good moments doing that, but he can just score in a lot of different ways, even though it's mostly back to the basket, like off balance shots, not necessarily open that often, but he just finishes through contact. And we'll just see if he can continue to do that against Atlantic 10 centers.
Yeah, and one little comparison, 21.7 rebounds season opener against St. Bonaventure in a game that made Mark Schmidt realize that, yeah, Anwar Malouk's not a starter.
Yeah. I guess just another question, though. You talk about this being a great fit for UMass. I just wonder what's going to stop teams from packing the paint against him, Cross, Levesque, because last year this was already a team that didn't rely on the 3-point shot at all. They lose TJ Weeks, who I believe led the, I think he shot twice as many threes as the next player, which was Matt Cross. They also lose DeAndre Dominguez, who's a good shooter for them. Are they going to have enough 3-point shooting to make this super big lineup work?
We're going to have to just wait on this, because I feel like this is already the fourth time we've had this discussion on this episode.
Probably.
I guess nobody has shooters now, except Dayton. They have Cheeks.
Yeah. Take away the 3-point line. Let's go back 50 years. That's the way these A-10 teams are built, I guess. We'll have to see.
Yeah, and you mentioned that the NEC is not a great league. Well, Dayton actually brought in, this is not one of the transfers we analyzed, but Dayton brought in the rookie of the year, whose name continues to escape me. Something Bennett from Merrimack. Yeah.
Javon Bennett.
Javon Bennett. Do you know who was the NEC Rookie of the year before that?
I think it was Cairo Luke, was it? Or no. He didn't play in the NEC. I don't know.
It was Anquan Hill.
Okay, it was a Bonnie.
Fairleigh Dickinson.
Oh, man. Did Anquan Hill...
Well,
how many games did he play last year?
Basically all of them. He just only played like 10 minutes a night. But I realized this, and I kind of realized if Anquan Hill stays at Fairleigh Dickinson, they're definitely a better team in the regular season. They might even end up winning the NEC either in the regular season or the conference tournament. And there's no chance in hell they beat Purdue, because they won that game by dragging Edie out of the paint and basically just screwing with Purdue's defense. Like, Edie killed them on the other end, and Hill would have helped them a little bit, but would 5 less Zach Edie points have been worth the difference defensively? I don't think so. So it's actually funny. Like, Anquan Hill might have been their best player had he stayed, and if he did, they never get their moment of glory.
All I can say is thank you, Mark Schmidt, for contributing in a small way to one of the greatest March Madness moments we've ever seen. That's amazing.
And by the way, shout out to Anquan Hill and Barry Evans, St. Bonaventure bench players who thought so highly of their time there that they're actually willing to come back. We have not seen that in the portal era.
All right, real quick before we wrap it up, was Kyrell Luke? He was the rookie of the year in the Patriot League,
Yes.
right? I didn't make that up. Okay. So a slightly better conference. He's back too. So the Bonnies,
Yep.
for the first time in, well, I guess, never mind. 2 years ago, they brought back everyone. They're not quite doing that this year, but yeah, they're actually keeping most of the core together, which is something we've seen Mark Schmidt have success with in the past, other than 2022.
And also, did you say something about Patriot League rookies? Because that's my
Probably.
last guy.
Oh, yeah, we have one more.
Josh Rivera of Lafayette. I'm way in on this guy. Going to Fordham to replace Khalid Moore. And you know what? I looked a little too far into it, probably. But it really said something to me that Keith Urgo, knowing that he had to replace Moore and everything he did for them this offseason, because look at their roster. Unless you're someone who's got way more Pat Kelly stock left than any of us do, they do not have a replacement on that team. And he was way too important on both ends for them to just recover from his loss. They can piece together Quisenberry replacement. Like if Angel Montas is actually healthy and he's as good as he can be, and Will Richardson takes a step up scoring wise, they can replace Quisenberry with what they have. They cannot replace Khalid Moore. In comes Josh Rivera, whose numbers don't really jump off the page because, quite frankly, he stunk in November of his freshman season against a lot of Power Five and A10 schools, by the way. But in conference play, 12 and a half points a game, five rebounds, all signatured by a great performance against eventual league champ Colgate in the late in the regular season, where he had 25 points, 10 rebounds on the road in New York. And sadly, I couldn't watch a full game of this guy, but I looked at his transfer portal highlight package. You know what the first thing I thought was watching all of these different fancy buckets he scored? He moves like Khalid Moore. Going to the hoop, whether it's with the ball or working off a cut, he looks the exact same. He's a little skinnier, but they're basically the same body type, too. Like, it's kind of wild. He's got a really nice looking 3-point shot. He threw in plenty of above the break threes onto that highlight reel, or someone did. I don't know if he actually made it. But it really just displayed his scoring prowess from all over the court. Didn't really get to see much else of anything, but Patriot League expert Ethan Hennessy, you all know him as the gentleman who provides us with much needed CBI bracketology that Tony Patelis always asks for. But the first thing he pointed out to me was that he is a great defender and was a guy that when Ethan got to see him in person this year, felt like he was an A10 level athlete.
What I know there's so many transfers to go this year, and like traditional strong teams like VCU, Dayton, St. Louis, they're gonna keep building, but how high can Fordham reach with the preseason hype this year? This has to be the most excitement ever, even though they're losing a couple key seniors, finishing the year the way they did, making it to the A-10 semifinals. They're going to have some pressure this year, dare I say, for the first time maybe ever. And bringing in Rivera just adds to that. I think you're right that he fits in very well and has a chance to start from day one. So it's looks like another good addition by Keith Urgo.
They might have the most talented roster in the league. Right now, I actually think they do. Now, if Holmes stays at Dayton and they continue to add the level of talent that they're capable of, they can still get to that point. But Fordham's whole bench is a bunch of guys who have pretty great high school pedigree. Or even Rivera, who wasn't a superstar in the Patriot League, but that's not. it's far from the worst conference in Division One, and he was great against in-conference competition. So, yeah, there's a lot of interesting pieces there for Fordham. And God, I need to find tape of a Lafayette game. If anyone has any like pirated Lafayette Colgate tapes, please send them to me because I'm more hyped about this guy than any other transfer right now.
Well, I'm sure we can't get the Golden Boys to help us out because I'm sure they burned all the footage of the 90-65 drubbing against LaSalle. But maybe somebody else can throw us a bone here.
Yeah, and Rivera barely played that game because he was in foul trouble. He shot 4 for 4.
Think just about everybody made all their shots out of that game.
So we'll close out there. Those are our 7 we dove into. Any other transfer news you want to hit on real quick? The only other thing I can think of, Noah Fernandes committed to Rutgers. So it'd be good to see him. That seems like the right level of school for him. Only other thing I want to say, it's truly amazing. 3 years in the conference, he never made an All-A-10 team.
Wow. I guess, I mean, injuries the last 2 years held him back from
Yeah,
getting there,
he
but
would have definitely made it 2 years ago if he had been healthy.
yeah, that's surprising. But when you think back, just yeah, unfortunately was never able to play a full season, but was very good for UMass.
But other than that, I'll wrap it up here unless you got anything else you want to add.
No, there's just so much going on with the portal. I think 20% of the country's in the portal right now, and I did my best to keep up with it enough to research these guys, but it's exhausted me the last few weeks. But yeah, I'll let you take it away with any final takes.
Yeah, my final thought, lock this in. If you're one of the 7 people left who are still listening at the end of this episode, remember that I said this. In this next month, someone's making a portal pickup that swings the title race. We are going to, at some point between April 15th and May 15th, a transfer will be picked up who will either make all conference for the regular season champ or make the all tournament team for the tournament champ.
Yeah, I think that's fair because nobody stands out right now. That's for sure. It's not like last year where we already knew Dayton and St. Louis were going to have a lot of guys coming back. So, yeah, I agree.
Yep, so we will see what happens there. Remember, VCU didn't land David Shriver until pretty deep into the spring, so plenty of time for everyone to finish improving their rosters. But we can still improve this show. We got plenty of time too. So if you got any ideas for us, any criticisms, or anything you think we've been doing well and we need to do more of, please reach out to us at the number 3BidLeaguePod on Twitter. Thank you all for listening. Please give us 5 stars on iTunes if you did enjoy the show. And come back here over these next few weeks. No concrete plan, but as the rosters start to fill out, we will be sure to bring on the experts of the respective teams to give us a breakdown there. And hopefully we can get some fun people in the summer that maybe we can't get in the winter to come on the show when they're busier. So everyone just keep an eye out for that.